We're walking in the air. We're floating in the moonlit sky. The people far below are sleeping as we fly. We're talking rainbow, snowman, hit it. It was 1983. Return of the Jedi was in theaters. Walt Disney's Treasure Island played Christmas Day on BBC One. And Rainbow released an instrumental version of the music from a classic British special. I'm your host, Jerry D, with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. Now, joining me is a Totally Rad Christmas All-Star and Ratty winner from Tis the Soundtrack. It's Kevin Williams. Kevin, how's it going?
It's going good, Jerry. How are you doing?
You know, I'm all right, man. Today's been hectic. Like, it's been a lot of running around. I went to meet an installer to help him bid like a permanent lighting job and to kind of like map it all out how it was going to go. And then his dog had some sort of emergency, and so they ran to the vet, and I was there by myself. And so that was fun.
That sounds awesome. We're out here just dealing with wildfires. They're all around us. So, you know, it's mid-90s, and you can't see the sky right now. It's just ash.
Well, I think you win, but I was just going to complain about traffic for like another, you know, but that's fine. Yeah, well, I'm sorry. That really stinks. I don't even know where to go from that, except maybe you need a little snow, you know?
That's right. Way to grow.
Well, it's good to see you, man. It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Yeah, I don't even remember the last. Well, maybe it was a laser tag. Might have been the last thing that we did.
I think it was last fall. Yeah, it's been a minute.
It sure has. Yeah. So I've been, because I switched jobs and now I run a whole lighting company, I've been crazy busy and the show has kind of fallen by the wayside a little bit. So I'm trying to fix that. I'm glad I have you with me because I always enjoy our talks. Super knowledgeable, just super cool guy as well. So, and I'm not saying that you did bribe me with the Prince Dargon Sektar's figure for the Ratties, but I'm not saying that you didn't. So
I think that's the best way to leave it.
That's right. So I appreciate that you're here. Now, we're here to talk Rainbow and the Snowman. But before we do that, just like Carol Kane did to Bill Murray in Scrooged, I want you to hit me with the toaster. So I'm going to ask you a few questions, and I want you to hit me with the first answer you can think of. Okay, you don't have to think too hard about it. So into which Christmas movie would you insert Rainbow's Snowman?
Oh, are we sticking with the 80s or do I get to pick
Christmas movie? Yeah.
I think I would put it into a horror movie. You know, it's just got that, you know, deep atmospheric, you know, we could do Silent Night, Deadly Night. We could do, I would say something like that. It's you could either lean into it and just have it be like the atmospheric piece, or you could, you know, go really dark and have it being kind of like that uplifting piece during just, you know, some brutal scene or something. So, so now we've gone from wildfires to there. So we should probably turn ourselves around.
This is going to be a great one. Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. I feel like it would have been cool in like an episode of Miami Vice, right? Like,
yeah,
it's got a little bit of that In the Air Tonight vibe to it, but we'll get into it. Okay. What other rock band would you like to cover Walking in the Air?
Ooh, can I go with fake rock bands?
Sure.
So I would say either, and I will stick with the 80s theme this time. So I would love to see like maybe Spinal Tap or or if you could get Bill and Ted's White Stallions, I think that would be a great cover of the song.
I'd listen to both of those for sure. Yeah. Like those are winners to me. I love Spinal Tap's version. I mean, they did release that song Christmas with the Devil in like 84, 85 ish. And I know I need to cover it, but I can't bring myself to do it yet. So yeah, okay, I'll take that. And finally, Okay, here's a hard one. Ready? Ian Gillan, David Coverdale, Ronnie James Dio, or Joe Lynn Turner?
Oh, it's Dio. I mean, you don't even have to think about that.
Really?
You know, that's, yeah, no, I'm so
I would
like
go
Rainbow.
With
the... I like.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I like Rainbow. I like, you know, to me, the best era was that early era that had Dio before he went off and, you know, did Black Sabbath and then Holy
like
Diver
Man on the
and
Silver
all that.
Mountain.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I like Ian Gillan, man, with the Mark II lineup of Deep Purple. So, but I mean, I think with any of those vocalists, you really can't go wrong.
No.
Yeah. So, well, that's good. That's just a way for our listeners to get to know you a little bit better. So thank you for that. Now, tonight we're here to talk Rainbow, specifically their song Snowman, which is a cover of Howard Blake's Walking in the Air from The Snowman. What do you remember, like, what's your history or experience with Rainbow, but also with The Snowman?
Yeah, so Rainbow, like we just were talking about a second ago, my experience with Rainbow was Deep Purple into Rainbow, and then by the time the album with this song came out, you know, we were past the part of Rainbow that I liked, which was, you know, the Magic and Wizards part of Rainbow from the first couple albums.
Right.
And
right.
And now we're just kind of in, like, you know, 80s hard rock mode. And so so by that time, I couldn't tell you hardly any Rainbow songs from that era. And then for Snowman, I don't think I knew Snowman was a thing until the probably early 2000s.
Right. Yeah. Same.
I imagine it was for one of those anniversaries, but like Borders or Barnes & Noble had big, there was like a re-release of the book and, you know, they had big displays in the stores for it. And I think I just assumed it was something new that had just come out. It wasn't, you know, this beloved thing from across the seas that we just had no idea about.
No, and I'm right there with you. I feel like I have like zero recollection, maybe like a passing commercial or like a clip here and there, but it was super passing. I mean, I know Mike Westfall like actually recorded it on VHS, and so so to him, like, he also grew up with that, even though he, you know, he's from this side of the pond. But like, I think most of us, and I know at least all my friends, none of us had ever heard this before. Like, we'd never seen it, we didn't know anything about it. I think maybe I might have seen the book somewhere eventually, but I didn't know it was a thing. And they love it. They love it more than like Charlie Brown, which is insane. But, you know, Charlie Brown's Americana. So makes sense, right?
Yeah, I don't think I saw the special until my son was 2 or 3. So this would have been like 2013, 2014, somewhere around there. And he was super into Sid the Science Kid when he was little. And
that's cool.
So we watched a lot of Sprout. That was the channel we got that it came on.
Right.
And that Christmas they were doing Snowman and Snow Dog as a back to back, like every day running up to Christmas. And so that, I think, was probably the first time I knew it was more than a book.
Right. Well, I didn't know about it until, I mean, like you said, it was, I'd heard of it, and then I don't think I saw it fully until I was going to do the episode, like season 1 or season 2 with the Volcanics. And Frankie from the Volcanics, he loved it. So they even recorded like a surf version of it and Walking in the Air. And so they came on, we talked about it, and then we talked about their album or their EP and the song. But like, that was the first time I'd seen it through, you know. I didn't know there was like 3 different versions, and one had David Bowie and one had Santa and, you know, whatever. I mean,
oh, the intros and the
intro. I didn't know anything of that.
Yeah.
Now, as for Rainbow, I'm like you, I loved Deep Purple. Like, the very first CD I ever bought, or it was either the first or the second, one of them was Machine Head by Deep Purple.
Yep.
So classic, you know, Highway Star, Smoke on the Water, Space Truckin'.
Yep.
I mean, it's like, I think Child in Time, like, it's got these like massive hits, right? That are just what Deep Purple's known for.
Yep.
And then, you know, Ritchie Blackmore being Ritchie Blackmore fires a couple of guys. And I think, who is it? Ian Gillan and Roger Glover. And then he hires David Coverdale. And then we got like Byrne and Stormbringer. Yep. And like, those are great too. But then Blackmore is going to keep Blackmore in, and he's he's going to fire everybody. And so then he just quits and forms a new band. And
yeah, and just, I love that right before that too, he took Elf out as their opener for, I think, their US tour. And so, you know, that's the very end of, you know, version one of Deep Purple. And so, you know, they're out there, they're doing their tour, the tour ends, and he fires the whole band, or I guess leaves the band, they do their own thing, and then takes everyone from Elf, you know, Ronnie James Dio included, except for the guy that, and I'm spacing his name, but it would, you know, be Blackmore's role. And so takes all but one person from Elf and drops them out too, and now forms Rainbow.
I'm telling you, man, if you were in a band with Ritchie Blackmore, you are not safe unless you're Ritchie Blackmore. Yeah. So the Snowman, highly beloved special, like we talked about, is based on the 1978 book by Raymond Briggs, The Snowman. In this particular version, you know, it's all animated and it's really nice. It's like these lush pastel kind of colors. I mean, it's just everything's soft, almost like watercolor-esque. And it's just, it's a really fantastic special if you see it. But, you know, I think just now as like a 40-something year old guy, it's just, I don't quite have the nostalgia for it like everybody else does. But I will say the music, Walking in the Air, is quite a great song. Howard Blake really did a great job. Peter Oudy, who sings it magnificently, I mean, it's quite fantastic.
Flying!
So were you aware of the song before you knew the special, or did you find those together?
No. So I'm pretty sure I heard the version of the song, the original from the special at some point, but never cataloged it away as belonging to it until much later. And I'll say the Rainbow version, I didn't know existed until a couple of years ago when you included it in your Merry mixtape. And that was the first time I think I ever heard that. And so that led me to bounce around and find the other versions and all that stuff.
I'm telling you, there's some really good stuff in there. And I had to cut a whole bunch of stuff and it was still too long, but I cut a bunch. So that tells you how much good stuff is out there. Like if I had to redo it, I'd throw in Shark Island's Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Have you heard that one?
I have. So I think that means we need to do a version two and come up with a volume two.
For sure. Yeah. They just take a Judas Priest song and put Santa Claus is Coming to Town lyrics on it. And it's fantastic. But yeah, same. So I vaguely recall the song. I don't think I knew the original by Peter Oudy. I think I knew the Alan Jones version.
Yeah, right.
And that was done in like 85-ish, 86-ish, something like that. Someone said it was like for a toy commercial. I don't know if that's true. I know it was included on his album that he released. Yeah. Like he has a Christmas album. So, and he's sung it like ever since. But, you know, but I remember there was like a big controversy over like who actually sung it, because everyone was like misremembering Alan Jones as being the singer in the actual special. And I don't think that's true.
Yeah. No, it's Peter Oudy in the special.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I knew the song ish. I did not know the special. No. Yeah. And I didn't know Rainbow covered it until like slightly before I had that show, which, by the way, go listen to that episode. Great episode. Tis a soundtrack. It was so fun. I cheated like crazy just making this really ridiculously long mixtape, but it was great. So make sure you go check that out. Some fantastic tunes there. Some of them I mentioned before on here. So, but yeah, same thing. Like, and I loved Rainbow. I didn't remember the song by Rainbow though, like at all. I was like you, when someone says Rainbow, I think of Dio. I don't really think of Joe Lynn Turner.
No. And it's it's weird on the album it came out on anyway, because it's on Bent Out of Shape.
Bent Out of Shape.
And so, like we were talking about, you're in, what would that be, Joe Turner era? Is that mm-hmm. Bent Out of Shape? Mm-hmm. And so you've gone, like we were talking about, from the swords and sorcery and wizards and, you know, high up on the mountains to just, you know, early 80s, just hard rock songs. And so yeah. And that's what that album is, right? Bent Out of Shape is just hard rock albums or mm-hmm. hard rock songs. And then you have two instrumentals on there. Mm-hmm. You've got Snowman, and then you've got Space in the Name of the other one. It reminds me of
I remember it was like nominated for a Grammy or something.
Yeah. It's super proggy sounding, and it's,
anybody there.
Yeah. 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 Cause it reminds me of Comfortably Numb. It kind of has that same progression. And I think even some of the lyrics are super close to, is there anybody out there? And, but they're just stylistically completely different than the rest of the songs that cut album.
Right. Yeah. Cause like, and I don't recall all the names of the album. I remember the album. Like I've listened to the whole album, and it's great. They're good songs. I mean, it's not like standout songs, like, you know, some of the other stuff. You know, there's always like at least one like single that you're like, this song is going to be great. But I just feel like they're all just good quality songs. I don't remember them, which is a shame, because it is a good album. You know, I love the album. It's just,
And it's a funny progression, because it's stuck between Drinking with the Devil and Make Your Move. And so you go from this like just straightforward rock song about drinking with the devil, and then like Make Your Moves, he's like daring someone to shoot him first, or, you know, or see if they can shoot him first. And then in between that, you've just got this, you know, instrumental piece.
Yeah. It's so strange. By the way, it was, yeah, Anybody There was nominated for the Grammy for Best Rock Instrumental Performance. Yeah. So, but it is weird, right? So if we kind of trace the history, Ritchie Blackmore kind of was the pioneer for like that neoclassical, like guitar style in rock and roll. You can hear it in a lot of his solos, Highway Star, especially. It's very like, you know, 16th notes. You hear a little bit of it on Deep Smoke on the Water. I mean, there's chunks of like these little pieces that you're like, oh, well, that does sound like you could play that on a classical guitar in like, you know, the 1800s, and it would sound fantastic. But he was kind of the pioneer there, right? So Deep Purple, they have that, their first hit with Hush. Then people are fired, other people are hired, and then we have like their classic Mark II lineup, and they have like massive, you know, Woman from Tokyo, you know, Smoke on the Water, like we said, just like this big following. Yeah. Then more people are fired, we get Mark III. I think by the time the 80s rolled around, they were on like Deep Purple Mark VII or something like that. And it's, you know, we laugh, but like, it's true. I mean, it really was like an advance. I don't even know what number, because like someone would be fired and someone else hired, and that counts as like a whole new lineup. And
you'd record with one lineup, and then you'd go tour with another one, because the guy that was great in the studio was just terrible, you know, on the road. And it just, it was just a revolving door.
Yeah. I would never feel safe if I was ever in a band with him.
Yeah.
But one of the things that made Rainbow stand out was like their stage show, right? So especially in like the Dio years, we had like this huge, like, I think it was like 3,000 light bulb, 40 feet long, just rainbow like screen that was all computer controlled. That was like real psychedelic, kind of cool looking. And I would love to have been there to listening to the music and just seeing this thing going. I mean, that had to be amazing, right? Just for effect.
Yeah. Because you're talking early 80s. So that's, you know, peak technology for the time too. So yeah, that, I mean, you know, you didn't have like the big screen in Vegas or anything like that at that point. So that's
no, you sure didn't. Yeah. It was like Blue Oyster Cult had their lasers and, you know, their laser show. And then Rainbow had like a giant rainbow, like LED screen. So Dio leaves in 78, of course, because of musical direction.
Yep.
He liked the harder edge stuff. He liked fantasy. Well, like you alluded to, swords and sorcery and, you know, all the adventure and magic and stuff. And Blackmore really wasn't super into that. Replaced with Jolyn Turner, like you said, Bent Out of Shape, released September 9th, 1983. This is the ninth track. And how do I describe it? Atmospheric is probably the best way to describe it. Like, what are your initial thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's like a darker version of something you'd find on Windham Hill. There's a, you know, it's if you're familiar with that and then just, you know, toned down and, you know, I don't know, more menacing, that's probably in the ballpark of what you're getting here.
For sure. For sure. I mean, there's a lot, like, it's very heavy on the synthesizers. Yeah. It's really well produced. Like the actual production quality is really fine.
I went down a rabbit hole trying to figure out what synth they used for the song. And so first I was just trying to find concert footage from that time and of this song. And the first thing I learned was on YouTube, a lot of people have cut their own music videos for this song. like an odd amount of people have cut music videos. I'll see if I can find the link to it. But the weirdest one was like a camp of Neanderthals, like out on the ice trekking around. And this is the song they use in the background for it. And not official or anything. It's just something someone made. But came to the conclusion he was using a mini Moog for it.
Okay.
But what I learned while I was going through that is, so in hard rock, in metal, you know, 1983, you've got a lot of synthesizers of that generation that are being worked into studio production.
Mm-hmm.
But you still have a lot of hard rock and metal fans that when they pay money and go to a concert, they don't want to see a dude up there at a keyboard jamming away on it. And so a lot of times, you know, throw a dart and, you know, pick a band at that time, they would take their keyboard player and either move them behind the scenery or move them off to the side of the stage and just cable them out. That way the sound got there. So it sounded like what everyone heard on the album, but you didn't see the guy up there. And so if you go back and look at a lot of early 80s metal and hard rock live recordings, they don't feature a lot of the keyboard play. Even the early MTV videos, you know, at that time, you know, when you've got all the smash cuts, you know, different angles, and you've got the close-ups of the shredding on the guitar, you'll be hard pressed to find the keyboard player in there until, you know, your mid to late 80s when it became a little, you know, your Duran Duran and it became, you know, and Human League, and it became an instrument of note at that point.
That's so wild. Like, poor guy. You know, hey man, I need you to stand like behind the amp, like just behind.
Yeah, just
don't want to see you. You know, that's insane. I couldn't tell. I honestly, I knew it was some sort of like polysynth, but that's about all, you know, because it starts off right with like this kind of the sound right away, this, and then it really. Dies down, and then we just get the nice drive, and it reminded me a little bit of Brad Fiedel's score for the Terminator. A little bit, you know. It's just, it's in a halftime, like boom, boom, pop, boom, boom. You know, but with that like that synthy Brad Fiedel type percussion, you know. Yeah. And so now I just want like the Terminator, like snowman. So
you know, he's just walking along and slowly lifting off the ground, and.
You know, and half his face is like Terminator, and he's got the laser sight. I mean, that'd be awesome.
Yeah,
it's really just spooky and atmospheric. And I know I've said that already, but it really is. It's, you got the nice like synth pads, and then there's a flute that all of a sudden takes up the main melody.
Yeah.
And it's like, I listened to this really, really hard over and over again. I was like, it sounds like it's a real flute, but I don't think it is. I think it's a synthesized flute, because at least in the liner notes that I found, it doesn't say.
Right.
Nope. So I don't think it's a flute. I think it's a synth flute. And that's even more wild to me. Like, why, why a synth flute of everything?
It's interesting because the original song, mm-hmm. I mean, this is an interpretation, but it's fairly close to the original song.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. And we'll talk about the harmonic progression a little bit, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I might jumping ahead a little, but it almost has the opposite feeling. So the original song, you know, it's used in the scene when they're, you know, taking off. They're gaining their lift.
They're flying, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it the whole little introduction piece to it we were just talking about, you know, it's we're lifting, and whoop, we're up. And so it's got that airy feeling to it.
Right.
It's the same progression, but it almost like sucks you down instead of, you know, lifting you up.
Right.
Like you said, the deep synth on there, the beat to it, it like draws you in rather than, you know, put some air under you.
Yeah, and there's even like an upward motion, like 16th note run on the synth, you know. It's... You know, it's like it's supposed to be taking you higher, like you said. Yeah. But that backbeat halftime feel, it's really... Man, it's a whole other vibe. And then because like the way that they've produced those sounds, you know, it's not like just straight snare drum and, you know, it's not like just an acoustic kit. They've processed those sounds. And so it's just like this really electronic kind of vibe. You know, it's almost cold and sterile in the way
it's
progressed.
It's really grounding, you know, to the melody that's happening on it.
Right. Well, apparently they covered it because I guess like Ritchie Blackmore, he found it. He just loved the melody. He thought it was a haunting melody. And he's like, I want to play with this and let's make it. So you're right. It is an odd choice for the album, but I do think that he was able to like contrast that synth flute well against his like kind of crunchy bluesy guitar.
Yeah.
So it's not like strictly a blues line because he doesn't really use the blues scale, but he uses enough of that like melodic and harmonic minor and even just straight up Aeolian to, you know, mode to really shape everything. And it's just, it was a nice contrast because it's got like that slight fuzz and it's deep with the, like there's a lot of mids there compared to like the real airy, breathy, faux flute.
Yeah, no. Yeah. It's, beating it to death here, but yeah, it's such an interesting take on it. And, you know, having what you just said about him finding it haunting, you can really tell that that's what he dialed up there, right? It's that juxtaposition between the instruments on there that make it feel haunting instead of, you know, just a nice little tune.
Right, for sure. Now, Howard Blake actually wrote the tune around 1970, but he adapted it for The Snowman when he was hired to do the score in 1982. So that's kind of cool that it's like, you know, we all have these, well, a lot of us have these ideas and then we can kind of adapt them for something else. And so it's just, I love it when someone has a song or something already, like what's his name that wrote the James Bond theme, Monty.
Oh yeah.
I can't think of his name right now, but you know, he had that like Mr. Biswas song and then he, he changed it to James Bond. Well, that's kind of the same thing, right? They had the song and then he just adapted it to The Snowman and then Ritchie Blackmore took it and made it something completely different. So the chord's very, very simple. It's in the key of D minor. So D minor, C, G minor, F, and, or excuse me, G minor. Let's see, flat six would be B flat and then back to D minor. So really, really simple, just a minor one, flat seven, minor four, flat six, and then back to that minor one. And so that's like the main verse. We get that melody over it. When the guitar comes in, it does use those chords a little bit, but it's almost on that interlude part, that ba 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 ba, you know. So all of a sudden the chords change, right? Now it's like starts with the major three. So it's F major, down to D minor, the minor one, then to B flat. So on all those, we have the F is like the constant there, which I think is kind of cool. It's like this pedal point almost, right? And then to G minor and then back to D minor. So it's just this really interesting line. And that's where he just starts like just wailing on the guitar.
Wailing on the guitar, yeah.
Thank you. The regular song has the bridge chords. The bridge chords here, you don't really hear it as much because they extend them a little bit. So it's not like exactly like the song. They kind of elongate it, which fits with like that halftime feel. So we have like the five chord, which is an A major. So the C is sharp all of a sudden. And that leads into the minor one. And then we get like a series of like secondary dominants, right? So we have a G major, which is like the five of flat seven to flat seven. So G to C. And then we have 2-5 of the key of six, which is great. And then, I mean, it's just, it's like all these cool little things, but they're all extended and you can't really tell because you have all these pads, this rhythm, and then you just have the guitar soloing over everything with its nice, like just crunchy guitar tone. Yeah. So they really take the song. And I got to say, for me, it works. It's weird, but it works. I love it.
Yeah, no, right there with you. And like you, like we've hit on a couple times, you know, everything is kind of synthesized and ran through. And then the guitar's got a decent amount of fuzz on it as he just kind of cuts over the top of everything else. So you get just a really unique sound out of it. And, you know, like I said, compared to everything else around it too, it's all the songs that precede it, the song or two that follows it are, if you're, you know, you're sitting down listening to the album in 1983, it's just such a unique thing, you know, just kind of tucked into the end of it.
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense like to be there, but at the same time, I really like it. Yeah. I'm glad they did it.
Although, you know, fast forward 40 years and, you know, we've got Blackmore's Night now and he's out putting on, you know, like felt vests and peasant hats and, you know, cranking the hurdy-gurdy, and it makes complete sense.
So Dio like really rubbed off on him, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. No, but yeah, I know what you mean. It's just his trajectory has been quite odd, I got to say. But I mean, he can still wail on the guitar. He can still shred pretty nice. So it's really cool that he can do that. I learned to play Smoke on the Water from an interview he did when he was in Blackmore's Night, and he showed how he plays it. And I was like, that's cool. Different from the way I was playing it. So then I started playing it the way he's playing it, and pretty cool. But so overall, it's the flute, right? And then it's a little bit of the guitar solo, and then the flute comes back again with that melody. And then it just ends with like the guitar. I mean, the guitar just goes off, Ritchie Blackmore just doing his thing. And then it's just like this weird, like not quite ending, like it, you know, it just long
stops.
Pads.
Yeah.
It's so unresolved. Like it doesn't quite end. Yeah. I enjoy it because it's unexpected, but at the same time, it's like, just go to the one chord, man. Just go to the chord. It's like just driving me crazy. But also like, it's musically, it's pretty cool. So it's one of those weird dichotomies where you really love it, but at the same time, you're just like, oh, come on, just, you know, you want to resolve. So, oh, well.
Yeah, no, and it's just a cool story, too, of how it got that far. Because like you said, Howard Blake wrote the song. He didn't write it for the special. I read an interview where he said it was, 10 years before the special, he was you know, burnt out from composing and wandering around on a beach and kind of was putting together the melody in his head and then didn't have anything to use it on. And so, you know, 10 plus years, you know, 8 years later, you know, they're doing this special and so a song that was written while walking on a beach, you know, and a melody that was, that was figured out while he was, you know, kicking through the sand is now, you know, used in a winter special about the snow. And then is, you know, a handful of years after that is, you know, pulled by the, you know, Blackmore during his hard rock era because it, you know, spoke to him. And then he just does something completely out of character for the band at the time with it. And so, yeah, it's just this weird story from, you know, beach in 1970 to weird track at the end of an 83 album.
For sure. And so, of course, I started looking up other covers. The one that surprised me most that I didn't recognize was Tangerine Dream kind of used it in The Keep. Did you ever see the movie The Keep?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I looked it up too, and I saw the song, but no reference for the movie though.
No. So the movie is odd, and it's one of those where it's like so odd. You're like, what am I watching? But at the same time, it's like, well, it's entertaining. Do I really want to turn it off? I don't know. So you end up watching and you're like, well, I just wasted like 2 hours. You know, it's got that kind of a vibe. Well, they work it into like the score on like certain parts. And it's just strange because if you didn't know it was there as you're watching the movie, you're not going to really notice it. I've gone back and listened to the soundtrack and it's like, oh yeah, I do hear it. But it's strange. So definitely between the two, I prefer Rainbow's version of it, I gotta say.
Yeah.
Favorite Rainbow song?
I don't know. LA Connection. I said Hollywood and I wasn't quite getting there, but I could not come up with the name of that.
Yeah. No, I mean, close enough, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I gotta say, I'm still a fan of Man on the Silver Mountain. That was like the first Rainbow song that I heard. So like, that's what I associate with Rainbow. You know, like when people name a band, there's usually one song that like pops out immediately. So, you know, Eagles, people say Hotel California, you know, Deep Purple, it's Smoke on the Water. Well, I got to say Rainbow is definitely Man on the Silver Mountain for me. So I do remember in college, not that I did anything illegal ever, but I downloaded it from our school servers and I burned it onto a CD of like classic rock. So it was like all my favorite songs from different classic rock bands. And that's the one I put for Rainbow. But if I'd known that there was a Christmas one, I probably would put that one on for sure. Okay. If you could play, like perform something on this instrumental, what would you add to it?
Oh, not perform one of the parts, but add something to it.
Yeah, if you could just add like anything.
So I think I would add, like, replace some of the synth pads with like a live drum piece. I think just adding that, you get that deeper sound to it and it would just be interesting. It might be interesting to insert a real flute set into it instead of just programming it. And but really any of those things get it farther away from where it's at.
Right.
I think the reason it works is it's so electronic for the time.
True. Yeah. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's no Tangerine Dream, but at the same, at the same time, you know, you're right. It is like pushing the envelope of like acoustic versus electronic especially for Rainbow, you know. I feel like if they really wanted to go Christmas with it, they probably could add some sleigh bells in there. But honestly, I feel like it almost needs some tubular bells, you know, like some chimes or something, like around, you know, just every once in a while. I think that'd be kind of cool. Okay, well, what would you say is your like happiest like memory or moment with either Rainbow in general or with this song in particular?
With the song, it's this, man. It's, you know, like I said, until you shared it with me, I didn't know it existed. And then for all the folks at home, scheduling to record this episode has been like being in a Ritchie Blackmore band. It's just getting axed and axed. And I think this is our fourth or fifth time we've been trying to get together. So
it's something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean,
unfortunately, it's always been my fault too. So
you can edit that part out. That doesn't matter, but it's,
no, that's all right.
Recording this episode's been the epic journey of its own. It's,
we finally made it. No, I, unfortunately,
here's your Silver Mountain. It's,
work, like I mentioned earlier, has been a beast this year. I've been traveling more than I thought and just all sorts of things. But I will admit, unfortunately, this time I am the Blackmore of the group. So, but I do appreciate you being patient with me because this was fun. Yeah, for me, I mean, it's got to be finally talking about it. I remember talking to you about it on your show, and I remember you saying, like, you didn't, you know, like, what are you talking about? And I had to look it up, and like, I didn't know this was a thing. And I was like, you know what? It's funny because same, I remember the album. I think I own the album, and I didn't remember it was a thing either. So it's just one of those that I found later on. But now, normally we do Gag Me with the Spoon here. There's nothing really to like. I mean, we're not really going to sing anything, instrumental parts, like, you know, wah, wah, wah. So whatever, we're just going to skip that. And we're going to go, you know, G.I. Joe taught us that knowing is half the battle. What do you think the other half is?
Oh, it's what we talked about earlier. It's hiding an epic holiday instrumental track between two 80s rock songs about drinking with the devil and threatening someone with a gun. That's got to be it, right?
It's got to be. That's right. That's how you slide your Christmas songs in. Past the past the producers, you know, the executives there. You got to do that if you're a rock band. No, but that's better than mine. I just think if no one's half the battle, the other half is just not being in a band with Richie Blackmore.
Well, that, yeah.
Because you're going to get fired. Yeah.
it makes you wonder. So for folks who haven't looked at it, you know, Blackmore's Night, it's super neoclassical. It's it's probably my favorite version of Blackmore outside of, you know, original Deep Purple. But you can go online, you know, go on YouTube and you look at some of their performances, and he's got a group and they've all got, you know, classical instruments. They're doing their thing. And for most of their performances, they're kind of dressed in, I guess, a version of period attire, or maybe, you know,
it's like quasi,
what you can cheaply cobble together that kind of looks reminiscent of the 1400s.
It's Renaissance fair clothes. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it makes you wonder, though, if, you know, before they're getting ready to go out into that pub where they're performing or, you know, recording their video or whatever, if you've got like three of the band members there, you're going to make me wear the big, you know, floppy hat again. I'll just put it on or you're getting fired, right? It's, you know, we're all replaceable.
Right. I got to say, though, I do agree, like, because I think his wife, like he and his wife are in that band together.
Yeah.
And it is really good. I think they even have a Christmas album that's pretty good. So,
And I was going to talk about that at the beginning when we were talking about, you know, this song that, I knew about the Blackmore's Night Christmas album long before you ever turned me on to this song. So that was my Richie Blackmore, you know, Christmas. And I had no idea there was something that, you know, predated that by 30 years.
Yeah. And I remember, so like every once in a while, I'll just Google, does blank have a Christmas song?
Yeah.
Or, you know, just and then, you know, just replace with a bunch of different bands or artists, or, you know, and I remember I did that like 3 or 4 years ago with, and sure enough, this came up and I thought, wow, okay, well, I don't remember that, so let me check it out. And there it was, and it haunted me for a while. And the last time we were going to record this, I actually listened to the song on repeat for like a day.
Oh.
I was like, I got to get it all. And then I realized I'm not going to get it all. It's I can't tell what's happening because of all the synths. Like it's flute guitar, but like I'm not honing in on anything. And I also, it didn't help. I was also working while I was doing it, you know? But you know, I wasn't focused, but still, like, I just had it on repeat all day long. And it's a great song, but I will, and I'll recommend you got to listen to the song, but you don't need to listen to it on repeat. So just a warning for those that thought, hey, maybe I need to repeat this thing. No, you're good. You're good. Kevin, this has been a lot of fun. Tell me about your show or anything else you want to plug.
Yeah. So the podcast is Tis the Soundtrack. You can find it at tisthesoundtrack.com and all the other normal places you hear your podcasts. And we talk about Christmas music, just like we're doing right now. We just hit our 2-year mark in April. So that was pretty exciting. And I originally made some notes when we were going to record this the first time where I said, I've been trying to take a page from you, Jerry, and do better pre-planning so I'm not delayed by the general chaos in life. And I've done a terrible job at that. So we've got a couple episodes in the can coming up that I can tease. So the first one is, I was out trying to kill time, actually, while my son was at a trampoline park birthday thing. And I came across an old 10-inch LP at a thrift store that I'd never seen before. And it was the Alfred Burt Carols. It was the first original recording of them.
Wow.
And that name didn't ring a bell immediately to me. But I flipped it over, and on the back was a whole story of the Alfred Burt Carols. So I went online and Googled it, and I found this cool website that someone who was also curious about the Alfred Burt Carols put together in like the mid-90s at the university where he worked. It was like the project he gave to his media students at the time, where he brought in Alfred Burt's widow and recorded the history of their family and him producing or him writing the songs for that album and or just his carols in general. And it was a cool read. And that bumped me into contacting his daughter, who now runs his estate. And so she shared some information with me that's getting wrapped up into just a history of the Burt Carols.
That's
so
cool.
We got that one coming up. And then I'll tease this one for you. So back when we did the Gremlins episode last year, we talked about a band that happens to appear on the soundtrack, obviously an 80s band.
Right.
And then in the 90s, they're also a localish band to where I'm at out here in Oregon. So you probably know who that is already from those two clues. Yes. I was going to tease it, man, but that's fine.
Sorry. I didn't say anything. I'll cut that out.
No. Leave it in. No, don't cut it out. But yeah, so in the 90s, where am I going with this? They were commissioned by the Oregon Trail Council to put out some classic music about the westward expansion out to Oregon. And so they created the Trail Band. And I bumped into it for the first time when I was doing my episode on the holiday music at Frontierland in Disneyland, because that soundtrack features a Trail Band song.
And it
led me to that, the Quarter Flash. So a while ago, I reached out to them because they notoriously don't do interviews. Like in the last 20 years, they said, we've talked about Quarter Flash, all we ever want to talk about them. Yeah, we're done with that.
Yeah.
They were super nice and gave me a ton of information about the Trail Band. And so I just wrapped up recording that. And so it's still a couple episodes down the road, but that's one I'm super excited to be able to share because, you know, while most people might be familiar with Quarter Flash, I don't think the Trail Band's going to ring a lot of bells.
No, I didn't even know that they were in the Trail Band. That's cool, man. I didn't realize it was the same. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. Well, very excited. Can't wait to listen to them. Yeah. Just make sure you go check out to the soundtrack. Lots of cool stuff. Some albums that you might have remembered but have forgotten. Some like just Disney stuff that you're like, oh yeah, I grew up with that. You know, I mean, really cool stuff. And then, yeah, he had a couple of guests on and we each created like a mixtape, or we were supposed to. I think some of us ended up creating like an anthology, but it, you know, it is.
Yeah, I think everyone cheated in their own unique and special way. So it's a.
It's all right. Well, I'll do a part two because I got a whole list of things.
That's awesome.
Well, this was fun. I'm glad we finally got to talk about it. It's just a great song, great band, and it was great talking about it with you. Hopefully you'll come back and we'll talk something else. I'm sure there's a million things we can talk about. I just got to get stuff scheduled. That's the hard part. And usually now I have a bank of stuff so that I can, you know, because I usually do my one Halloween, one Christmas episode, and then one Thanksgiving, one Christmas episode a week. And I don't know if I'm getting that done this year, so we'll see what happens. But
but the big question is, are you enjoying the new job?
I am. It's been a lot of fun. Yes. So, yeah,
so that makes up for it, man. I've been following along. So I will now tease Jerry's other podcast.
thank you.
So if you've seen those episodes, pop up while you're listening to Totally Rad Christmas, they are fantastic too. And I never knew the commercial light industry was a thing to start out with. I just assumed that people that installed them went to the hardware store and bought them like I do when Christmas time comes around. So, you know, that to me, that is just fascinating that world even exists and that you're like plugged right into the middle of it.
Oh man, there's like a whole thing and there's some drama that I won't talk about on here, but it's fun. It's interesting. Yeah. We got some cool episodes on that coming up. Because of my new role, I ended up kind of inheriting a show from the owner of the company and his brand ambassador. And So yeah, it's been fun. I got some really interesting things lined up on like whether you should use color or just warm white, and like the different ways that people prepare for like installs with those. It's, people are crazy, man. So
oh, yeah.
That's all I gotta say. But yeah, it's fun. So I do appreciate that. Yeah, and so far it has been worth it. Much more time with my family. Just
yeah, I think I heard so, you actually got to make it out to Florida to the park.
I did. We actually went to Disney World. So that was great because usually I'm working at that time. So yep. Yeah, that it was pretty fantastic. Great time with my family, and hopefully we can do it again soon. But
oh, that's awesome, man.
But in the meantime, I want to say thanks again. And I'll end it with, we're surfing in the air, we're swimming in the frozen sky, we're drifting over icy mountains, checking us out on our social media pages, which you can find at linktree.com/totallyradchristmas. And if you're feeling like covering a song from a beloved Christmas classic, leave us a review on iTunes. It helps us reach more people and spread some rad holiday cheer. Now, don't forget to check out our merch shop on tpublic.com and our super dope website, totallyradchristmas.com. I can't let you go. Later, dudes.